Blog Talk Radio.
I know that pain from inside out, the kind that never goes away. You just learn how to live with it. And now I know there are women all over this world who have gone beyond the pain to bring meaning to a lost life, the life of a child. In my case, my writing and speaking have helped to ease the pain of my son's loss. For my guest today, Angela Ware, she bakes dozens and dozens of homemade cookies. Her family-run business, Dojangles, was started in tribute to the loss of her 9-year-old twin son, Eric, who died of a brain tumor 5 years ago. Aaron is Eric's surviving twin, and he's the center point of launching the business. Aaron and his mom were featured on Oprah, have met the celebrated chef Paula Deen, and have been featured on CBS News and The Washington Post. And now we're going to talk with Angela about her husband, her 3 sons, and transforming grief into a successful business. It's Women's History Month, and we're featuring women like Angela Ware who defy the odds to make a difference in this world. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the show. I hope that you are doing well. I hope that you were not caught in the wrath of that tornado path in the middle part of the United States. And for those who were caught, we certainly send our thoughts and prayers your way. It's almost springtime, but it's definitely Women's History Month, and we'll give you a little bit of history about how this whole month of celebration in tribute to women came about. We'll talk to you about that later on in the show. But I'm excited to bring on a wonderful, delightful, visionary woman who, as I had mentioned in my setup to this interview, has experienced what I have experienced, the death of a son, something that is tragic, something you never get over, whether it is an accidental death like my own son or whether someone has passed away because of an illness and a brain tumor. It is still very painful and one that you never, ever get over. But in so many cases, scholarships have emerged, nonprofit organizations, and in this case, a cookie company. And I'm delighted to bring on the air with our listeners today, and we have those who are listening live. And if you'd like to ask a question, you can always just press the number 1, and we'll bring you on and let you ask your question. But for others, we're just very excited to bring either online or whether you're listening on the phone or listening as an archive, Angela Ware. She is the president and CEO, chief baker, chief cookie organizer, strategic planner, marketeer extraordinaire of Dojangles. Hello, Angela. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry to actually be connected to you this way, but I'm excited so that hopefully there'll be some who are going to be listening who will be inspired about what you have to say. So tell us about, first of all, what is it like daily to run your business, Dojangles?
Dojangles is unique in that we don't have a storefront. We're basically on the internet, and we do have people in the neighborhood who have heard about it. We work with them, and we just work with them passing the word. I don't really have formal training in business, but I have learned a lot. It's a lot of – it's actually a full-time job. You've got the baking, the ordering, the accounting. There's always something that you need to do, going out and passing the word, trying to get businesses to accept your cookies and sell them. It's exciting, it gets frustrating, and it's fun.
That's probably a very good way to say it. You know, I'm interested because, again, we'll talk about your sons and what happened. But so often when something like this happens, someone will immediately set up a nonprofit organization, or they'll set up a scholarship fund, as I have done. But I don't hear that much about, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show, since it is the beginning of Women's History Month, of actually starting a business in tribute to your son. How did you make that decision? And talk to us about that.
Well, because of Eric's death, Aaron, since he was an identical twin, was having a lot of difficulty adjusting, a lot of serious difficulties adjusting, and we took him to his pediatrician, Dr. Marilyn Corder, and they just spoke together just to find out what was going on in his head and what he wanted to do. And she asked him what he liked to do, and he told her he liked to bake. So she handed him money and told him to start a company, come up with a name and a business plan, and come back to her in a week.
Wow.
And that was the first time I ever saw him smile since Eric's death. And in the car, he came up with the name Dojangles. And when we got home, he started baking and making accounting of the money that she gave him. And it went from there. But after we started selling cookies, we were making so many that first we were giving away, then we started selling them to my husband's coworkers. And after we had some money, we had our meeting. We had monthly meetings, and I said, well, what do you want to do with your money? And Aaron said, I want to spend some, save some, and I want to give some. I said, well, who do you want to give it to? And he told me he wanted to give back to the people who helped us during Eric's illness.
Wow.
And I thought that was remarkable for a 10-year-old child to come up with something like that. So our first donation was to Casey Cares in Baltimore, Maryland, because they had been absolutely wonderful to us, and they also kept in contact with him after Eric's death. And we were told we were the first clients who ever gave back, and they had put out a press release about the donation, and it just went from there.
So, and I must tell my listeners that you're in the Washington, D.C. area, so obviously your son would reach out to those organizations that are close by to you. I mean, I'm what amazes me the most is that the pediatrician had the insight to give your son money to start a business. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Yes.
That would be her recommendation for curing his particular level of depression. That's quite extraordinary.
Well, we had tried some traditional methods, and they just weren't working. And at that point, my husband and I felt that we were just losing him emotionally, and we had to get him back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we took him to talk to her personally, because they had a good relationship. She's had them in her care since they were born. And she knew them very well, all three of the children.
And again, you have three children. I have three children. You have an older son.
Yes.
I have an older daughter. You had identical twins. I have fraternal twins, boy, girl. So, again, the similarities are really there. So tell us a little about Eric. He's the twin son who passed away.
Yes. Eric was amazing. I know you put some of your children on a pedestal, and nobody ever has bad things to say about their child, but he was very smart. He was funny. He had a great sense of humor, and I think he just thought on a completely different level from other people. I think he's the only child who asked a surgeon who was about to operate on him what his training was and where he ranked in his school. So he was really funny. He understood puns. We used to play word games, and all of us would be in the car, and I used to have them compete against each other in spelling bees and history and things like that. And because they were so competitive, it was just fantastic what they would learn and pick up. But he was an amazing kid.
God, it sounds very eerily like my own son who passed away in terms of the outgoingness and the natural talent and the abilities. And tell us about his relationship with Aaron.
They were identical twins, and they were very close. They were very difficult to separate in school, and I had to wait a couple of years before they were ready for that. They did the usual twin speak and traded places in class and all those kinds of things. But they had a very, very close relationship, and it was just wonderful. And I have no idea how Aaron was able to move on without that connection.
And then when was Eric diagnosed with a brain tumor? At what age?
He was diagnosed at age 6.
Mm-hmm.
He started falling. He was falling down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And his hands were shaking, and we thought he was kidding at first, and then we realized that it looked like something that really needed to be looked at, and next thing we knew, we were in the hospital, and they were telling us he had a at that time, a non-malignant was called an astrocytoma of the brainstem. But after chemo and radiation, he had a brief period where he was just fine, but he relapsed, and the astrocytomas had returned and become malignant. And he did very well until he died on October 2nd when he was dying.
At the age of 9.
Yes.
So he lived 3 years, and clearly your entire household, probably most especially Aaron, were deeply affected by the transition he was going through and then his loss. Talk to us about your oldest son, and I have another question to ask you, but talk to us about, because so often when something like this happens, when you have twins, again, my situation different but similar to yours in terms of having three children and twins and having one of them to pass away, if you're not careful, sometimes the oldest child can become overshadowed. How is the relationship with your oldest son, especially now with his surviving twin brother?
Right. His oldest brother is Bryce, and Bryce is now 17. Aaron will be 15 on St. Patrick's Day. They had a very difficult time learning to deal with each other mm-hmm. in the beginning, and it was a very hard road that took years to get through. Because Bryce felt guilty of being a surviving sibling because he felt that if he had been affected, then Eric and Aaron could have stayed together. And it was a while before we realized he was holding that guilt.
Hmm.
He also had a different way of dealing with his sadness over the events. He's a very quiet child.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned to music. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a song about his brother, and he played it on the trumpet, and he spent a lot of time pretty much by himself trying to process everything, and that was completely the opposite of how Aaron and Eric handled things. So Aaron went through a period where he thought his brother didn't even care that mm-hmm. Eric had died, but that was not the case. It's just that he had processed everything in a different way.
Very differently, right.
So now it's a joy to hear them laugh and start trouble together and go outside and play catch and things like that, because there were so many years where they didn't even want to deal with each other because just being with each other reminded them of the absence of Eric.
Mm-hmm. And do you, Angela Ware, when someone, and this is something that I had to learn to do and learn to comfortably do, when someone asks you how many children you have, how do you respond?
That was a very touchy question for
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
I always say three.
Mm-hmm.
And usually
I do too.
Leave it at that, but sometimes you have to explain. And I still say three.
Yes.
And if someone asked, I explain it, but I just leave it at that. But mm-hmm. it was hard for me to decide how to answer that question because people only see the two. But you
right.
do. You had three, and there's
right.
three. Still here.
Exactly. And I still, 15 years later, say I have three children. And if the explanation is needed or if it's asked for, then I will. I'll say I have two living children and then one who has passed away. So it explains why there are three, and I'm pretty emphatic about that for the same reasons.
Yes.
Tell us about, I want to sort of switch gears and go back to the business. We're talking to Angela Ware. She is the president, CEO, chief baker, and cookie cutter and creator of Bojangles, a wonderful cookie company. I had the pleasure of eating one of those great cookies last Saturday at a meeting. I do want to thank, I believe she's listening, Beverly Munn and Joanne Fagan, who introduced me to your company and your business. You can certainly go to Dojangles. I'll spell that for you. That's D as in donut, OUGHJANGLES.com, and find out more about how you can order these fabulous cookies from Angela Ware, her company, her family's business, and particularly the sweet stuff from Aaron. Talk to us about your time on Oprah and how that happened.
That was very exciting. After we were featured in the Washington Post, we were contacted by Katie Couric's people, and she had one of her correspondents come to our home in St. Mary's County, Maryland, and interview the family.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, apparently some people from Oprah's team heard about Aaron and the company, and they sent Nate Berkus down to interview him, and the premise was to build a business plan for us because we really didn't have the background, but it was something we were really passionate about. But after talking privately with Aaron and understanding how the business came about, he decided that this was more than just a need for a business plan, that this should go in another direction. So he stepped outside and called Oprah, told him this was a completely different story, and she said, go for it.
Wow.
And we all, the whole family went to Chicago. We were treated so wonderfully, and the experience was just incredible, especially now since the show's no longer on the air. We got there just in time. But it was fantastic, and all the...
So did they actually bring the whole family out? Did they fly you out there?
Yes, they brought the whole family. And all the difficulty and pain that we've gone through was... For a while, it just disappeared when we saw the look on Aaron's face when Oprah surprised him with Paula Deen.
Oh, that was, I remember that, and I'm sure lots of people, I even talked to my older daughter earlier today and let her know that you were going to be a guest on my show, and she said, I remember that, a similar kind of example. To remember your son's look when Paula Deen came out with her smiling face, describe that, that moment to our audience.
Karen was completely overwhelmed. We had no idea that Paula was there. She flew in just to visit Aaron, and she flew right back out. He was just speechless, and he spent a lot of time just staring at her, saying, I can't believe you're here, I can't believe you're here, because Paula is one of his favorite cooks, and that he couldn't have done a dream list with her on it. And she was kind enough to invite us to Savannah, and they took care of the travel for the family to come to Savannah the following summer, and we had a wonderful time. We went to her restaurant. We toured. It was just an incredible experience, and I think this has all been part of the healing process for Aaron once he got over the fact that people would recognize him and know why they recognized him. He got to be able to appreciate all of the things that we'd been able to do.
So, I mean, you've had some real highs. I think about people who have been in business much longer than you have, and they've never met Oprah or Paula Deen. But you've had all that. You've had great publicity. But now you're into the day-to-day part of running a business. And tell us, walk us through what that's like. I mean, you certainly can use the publicity to your advantage, but you also have to look at the competitive factors. You've got to make sure that things are up to date on your website. Walk us through what it's like to be a woman entrepreneur during Women's History Month running a cookie business.
Well, sometimes my day can start as early as 4 o'clock in the morning, depending on my orders. And the first thing I do is check my emails for orders, and then I go through to see what's needed for supplies and decide on the time to take care of that. I go over previous orders, make sure they have been done. Sometimes I contact customers to find out how they found the cookies, whether or not they appreciate, you know, if they were what they wanted. Get out the word, because a lot of them, sometimes we get orders for APO and FPO addresses, the military, because we can send to them. So people send gifts to their loved ones overseas, and that's something we've been able to do. There's the inventory. There's finding opportunities to collect things, because we collect toys, because one of the other things we do is we twice a year send a box of toys to Children's Hospital National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. That's where Eric spent most of his time. They have a treasure box, and his opinion was that there were never any cool boy things in there, because there were always tiaras and Barbie dolls and things like that.
Yeah.
And I was made to promise that there would always be cool boy toys in the treasure box. So that's another part of my duties. And we collect them, you know, go to Target, things like that, and pick up things. And a lot of time is spent going out into the community and finding people who will agree to sell our cookies, passing out cards, making samples, and coordinating with the call-in orders we get from we deliver up to 60 miles. And we just started delivering to the local college, St. Mary's College, in trying to get the information out to the parents that we can do cupcakes and cakes and things for their children's birthdays or special occasions. And that's another branch because, you know, we provide gifts and balloons and things like that. So there's a lot on the plate, and it takes – I have a book, and I keep notes of what I have to do the next day.
Right, right.
And we're learning a lot. We're learning a lot. We're still in the beginning phases, but I'm confident that this is going to work out for us because it's just been so many things laid in our path that direct me to – doing this as a full-time thing and making sure that it succeeds. And I think we need to make this succeed just for Eric.
Mm. Do you ever see yourself moving into a commercial kitchen or contracting this business out, those kind of things?
Well, the kitchen we have is commercial. It's in our home, but it's in the basement.
Yeah.
It is commercial kitchen. However, during one of our meetings, Aaron did point out that he had already picked out real estate where we could have a standalone store. It's an old 7-Eleven, and it's been closed since we moved into the area 5 years ago. And he said, "See, Mommy, there's a side where you can put a drive-through, and we can do this and we can do that." And this, you know, he was 12 years old at the time. I said, "You know, aren't you thinking ahead for somebody who doesn't help that much? You know, you dump the trash and mix the dough. Come on, guy." But it's something that he was actually thinking about, and we actually have our eye on that. If things go the way we want to have a standalone store and start here in St. Mary's County and move on to other places. We really want this to be something that our family can be proud of and others can be proud of and see that life doesn't end at the death of a child. You have to take care of the surviving children and show them an example and find something positive out of it. And this is the most positive thing we found here.
Well, that's a great way to end this segment. I just want to thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Again, go to their website, order their cookies. We have lots of wonderful holidays coming up throughout the year, and there'll be a holiday or a special occasion where you can order these wonderful cookies. I've tasted them. They're fantastic. And the website is Doujangles, Doujangles.com. Great cookies, a wonderful family story. Started off, first of all, with sadness and tragedy, but certainly has turned out wonderfully so. Angela Ware has been our guest, and we wish you, Aaron, Bryce, your husband, and your entire business, and that little closed-up 7-Eleven, I think is going to be the first operation for Doujangles.
With a drive-thru.
Franchise, with a drive-thru. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Okay.
We've been talking to Angela Ware, who is a remarkable, wonderful woman, and has now shown us that things can be done in a way that's respectful and dignified and one where you can really keep a memory alive of a loved one. She's done that beautifully, and her son as well. And hats off to that pediatrician who gave the first amount of seed money. I wish more professionals or people who have money would provide seed money for small businesses or businesses that need just a jump start, or for young people or women, since we're talking about Women's History Month, to get things going so that economic development can be the order of the day. And I say that in a wonderful city like Boston that is over-indexed with nonprofit organizations, many of them my clients, so I speak very respectfully of them. But economic development also includes small businesses and the beginnings of small businesses and where they need to start. And so often they're neglected or they're left to struggle and die on the vine instead of nurturing and watering them so that they can grow and be strong, like Bojangles is definitely going to be. So hats off to Angela Ware for what she, Aaron, her son, her husband, Bryce, their older son, are doing to make a difference in this world. We're going to talk about that all month long, women who are making the difference. And we wanted to highlight Angela because she's the one that's keeping the fire burning. She's out there every day making sure orders come in. She's cooking, she's baking, she's being the marketeer. So things are moving forward because of her efforts, like it happens so often with women. We talked last month about the civil rights era and the importance of it. And in that case, talking to Juanita Abernathy, who was the guest speaker at my empowerment breakfast on February 2nd, it was very apparent that that movement, the fuel, the engine that kept it going, were the women and the children of that movement. Like anywhere else in the world, if you don't have women involved in some kind of way, so often things just don't get done. Or they're done in a way that maybe puts people in harm's way. So women are extremely important in the marketplace, in this world, as they have been for so many years. I'm going to just read you just a little bit about how Women's History Month got started. We have Mother's Day, we have Father's Day, we have other celebrated holidays, and we do have in this country Women's History Month. And before the 1970s, the topics of women's history largely were missing from general public consciousness. To address the situation, the Education Task Force of the Sonoma County, and that's in California, Commission on the Status of Women, initiated a Women's History Week. Very similar, it sounds like, to Carter G. Woodson, who started Negro History Week in 1926, his visionary idea that eventually grew into Negro History Week, grew into Black History Month, which we celebrate today. But going back to Women's History Month, it started in 1978, and they chose the week of March 8th to coincide with the International Women's Day. So that's a very important day that's coming up. I know that the Girl Scouts were also founded and celebrate their big commemorations in the month of March. The celebration was met with a positive response, and the schools began to host their own Women's History Week programs. Then the next year, leaders from the California group shared their project at the Women's History Institute at Sarah Lawrence College, which happens to be in New York, I believe. Other participants not only became determined to begin their own local Women's History Week projects, but they also agreed to support an effort to have Congress declare a National Women's History Week. So a week obviously then became a month. In 1981, Senator Orrin Hatch and Representative Barbara Mikulski co-sponsored the first joint congressional resolution proclaiming a Women's History Week. That's a bipartisan bill that was sponsored by two senators, one Democratic and one Republican. And then in 1987, the National Women's History Project petitioned Congress to expand the celebration to the entire month of March. Again, those things typically happen. Since then, the National Women's History Month resolution has been approved every year with bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate. And you can find out more about this by going to, I don't have the website in front of me, but you can go to my blog, and I have all that information there. You can go to tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com. Go to Carol's blog, and you'll see pictures of the cookies. You'll be able to link through to Dojangles, and you'll also see the websites for the government's focus on Women's History Month and also the National Women's History Project that is still based in California. So we're going to spend the entire month of March just talking about and celebrating women of all stripes, all walks of life. I definitely want to include a woman or two from outside of the United States because of the extraordinary amount of time, commitment, courage, faith, and vision that women have had certainly throughout the generations, but particularly now with all that we're facing. Women like my daughter, who is married with a husband, and they're both working, and they have two daughters, my grandchildren, and so it's the juggling act of balancing work and family issues. How do you get through all that? and still stay at the top of your game? How do you reach out to those who need a helping hand and do it in a loving kind of way? That's what women do, and that's who we are, and that's what women are all about. So we're going to talk a lot about Women's History Month in the month of March. Thank you so much for listening to this program. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we'll bring you back another program live next week. Take care. Enjoy your week or weekend.